This morning. No, I said this morning. Just testing you. Actually, this morning you're going to get a pop quiz. How many people's anxiety just went up? Yeah, there's a couple of you. I know that feeling. But not to worry, this one is only one question that I need you to absolutely, honestly answer, okay? Absolutely, without a doubt, you have to answer this honestly. How many people read my Connector article this week? Not bad. I'm impressed. Very good. Okay, with that in mind, for those who didn't read my Connector article this week, I wrote about the importance of living a life in the here and now, while keeping an eye on the horizon of our future. I pointed out four cornerstones. Anyone want to go for extra credit on this one? I'm really pushing it, I know. Okay, I won't do it. The first one is expected. Get grounded in our UU principles. Have a practice of loving compassion based on the golden rule is the second, which is treat others the way that you would want them to treat us. And then to develop a daily practice that feeds our mind, our body, and our soul. Now, if you are a person who doesn't relate to the idea of soul, I can understand that. Think of it this way. It's like that childlike part of us that wants the world to be a better place. And the last cornerstone, imagine and visualize the life and community that we desire. I discovered these cornerstones from the amazing men and women that have come before me. One of those people was the moderator of the Unitarian Universalist Association when I first started working there. The moderator conducts the business meeting at the annual UUA General Assembly, while also acting as the chair of the Board of Trustees. Her name is Denny Davidoff. To say that Denny is a powerhouse is to understate her impact and her passion for Unitarian Universalism. Denny has presence. Recently, she wrote what she feels it takes to be an exemplary Unitarian Universalist leader. And I consider this list actually a great list for all of us, because we all aspire to be leaders in our own way. Here's Denny's list. Number one, breathe. Number two, relinquish control. Number three, learn to pray. Number four, play fair. Number five, maybe my favorite, temper narcissism. Number six, read poetry. Number seven, internalize patience. Number eight, listen intently. Number nine, admit errors. And number 10, breathe deeply. Denny included both breathe and breathe deeply, in my opinion, because in a manner of ways, this action helps us to cultivate the other eight recommendations. For example, breathe and listen intently. They go quite nicely together. Just as breathe and internalize patience, or breathe and play fair. Then again, is there anything better than to breathe and temper narcissism? The action of breathing deeply can even be considered a prayer in itself. Breathe. The body desires to do this automatically, and yet under stress, how many of us actually hold our breath? Man, I'm one. I'm like, and I'm going to pass out, but I don't breathe. Following the breath itself, in and out and in and out, is the basis of most meditation practices, to follow the breath. Interestingly enough, and I swear to you, I did not plan this, no way, no how. Yesterday, we memorialized another powerful Denny Donaldson. Imagine, yesterday I kept trying to not say Davidson when I was saying Donaldson. Challenge. But yet, she also did a list of 10 things. And we put that in the order of service. And I did not plan this, which is kind of amazing. That stuff happens to me a little bit too much to be coincidence. I'd like to share what Denny Donaldson had written for her 10 top list. 1, I am Denny Donaldson, a happy wife and mother. 2, I am an excited tour guide in Boston. 3, I get in touch with my real self on the beach at Wellfleet when my family and I are there alone. 4, I like to make people feel good about themselves when they are with me. I like to warm people with my fire. 5, I'm always excited about what comes next. 6, I see to it that I am in control with my life. 7, each season is my favorite. 8, each month is my favorite. 9, I am disorganized. And I think the truth of it would be she wouldn't have a list if she were. But we all have our internal perceptions. And 10, I am living the life I chose. If you knew Denny, and I didn't, but I learned a lot about her yesterday, she was clearly an optimist who sucked the marrow out of life in everything that she did, proclaiming, I am living the life I chose. Now, that is some kind of powerful statement to assert. I'm living the life I chose. How many of us can actually say that? We're doing exactly that. Yeah. Being exactly where we want to be in this moment. We're right here. Here we are. My friends, the ability to live in such a way, I promise you, is within our grasp. In large measure, we just need to realize how we want to live our lives, to know it, while remembering that perception is everything. What would the life of our wildest dreams look like? What would it look like? What would the life of your friends, your partners, your families' dreams look like? I think that I might choose to be a little less busy. Just a little. And a bit more in balance. Right? Life can be a little crazy sometimes. Real busy, not a lot of balance, just keep moving. I often wonder if our hyper-modern society is busier or not than our forebears. They were busy, right? I'm guessing that most of us do not make bread every morning or cheese every night, care for and milk cows or goats every morning and every afternoon, gather eggs or pluck feathers, make our clothes or take them down to the river to clean. We no longer have to wait weeks for the response to a letter that we've sent. We get a fairly rapid response to emails, text messages, or Facebook posts. Our lives are so instantaneous in a lot of ways that I wonder if it gives us enough time to really think about the consequences of our choices. The point of all of this industrial automation was to give us a better quality of life, less harried, easier. But have we lost something in the transition? Do we really have a better quality of life? Are we exactly where we want to be? Or are we driven to pack every moment to the brim? Instead of tasks to secure our survival, we now fill our time with work to pay for all of the industrialized perks like mobile phones, cable television, the internet, and having the latest and greatest delivered to our door via FedEx or UPS. We specialize in pushing buttons on the microwave, stove, dishwasher, washing machine and dryer, and of course the thermostat, and occasionally with each other. We haul clothes and dishes to the washer or wood to the fireplace and leaves to the compost. But with all of this automation, has our quality of life gotten better? Or has it just become more complicated with less time available? Instead of hitching up the horse and taking the wagon to the general store, we hop in our heated cars and drive and park, shop in comfort, hand over a card, most likely to pay, and we're on our way. What may have been a day-long endeavor 100 years ago is now completed in less than an hour, with a lot less discomfort. That's kind of nice. And yet, look at all the packaging. And do we even know where our food comes from? Do we even experience our surroundings when we make that trip from home to the store? How many people drive their car and do not necessarily remember the trip because they've been on autopilot the entire time? Think about us all driving around on autopilot. It's kind of scary. I wonder what our ancestors would think about how we live our lives today. They might think that it's magic. That was the case with regard to the introduction of electricity. That was dangerous and magical, considered a novelty at best. No one could imagine it being in their homes. I wonder if they'd be worried about shelves being empty at the store during a storm. I'm guessing that our forebears had far different worries than we do today. People knew how to survive back in the day if the shelves were bare. They gardened, canned for survival, they read by candlelight, went to bed early, had to stoke the fire periodically throughout the night, and they rose early. Today we're busy people, but in a much different way. I'm not sure we have a deep enough understanding about the complexities of this hypermodern world and what it takes to survive and thrive in the 21st century. I was intrigued by what the World Economic Forum shared on this topic, and I'd like to share it with you. This accelerating interconnectedness has in many ways made life better, but it has also brought greater complexity to world affairs. Many of the grand challenges that confront humanity, problems such as diverse as climate change, the stability of markets, the availability of energy and resources, poverty and conflict, often seem to entail impenetrable webs of cause and effect. But these problems are not necessarily impenetrable. Powerful new tools have given scientists a better understanding of complexity. Instead of looking at a system in isolation, complexity scientists step back and look at how the many parts interact to form a coherent whole. Rather than think about poverty, they might look at how income rates relate to conflict, politics, and the availability of water. Whatever the object of study happens to be, complexity scientists assemble data, search for patterns and regularities, and build models to understand the dynamics and organization of the system. They step back from the parts and look at the whole. I wonder what the implications of that are. I wonder what our ancestors would have thought about complexity science. And yet, we clearly need to have such a thing in our global society. Here are some facts about our world today. And I don't want to bum you out, but here we go. The population on this planet is now soaring to over 7,205,436,800 people, and it is growing by an alarming rate. There have been 4 million births worldwide since January 1st of this year, offset by about 2 million deaths during the same time period. We are one large growing entity globally. Have any of you seen the movie The Matrix? Okay. In that movie, there is a scene where the digital program, Mr. Smith, the scary dude, is speaking to the character Morpheus, and he's got his hand in his face, and he's whispering in his ear, and he says, "The human race is like a virus, expanding and consuming all of the planet's resources in your wake." That is quite a visual. The global population is expected to reach between 8.3 and 10.9 billion by the year 2050. You getting that? 8.3 and 10.9 billion people by the year 2050. Think of the magnitude of 11 billion people on this planet in just 35 years. Compare that to the world population of about 800 million in 1776. $11.8 billion. We're expanding rapidly. There were only 2.5 million people who lived in what is now known as the United States in 1776. That included Native people. To put it into perspective, New York City has a population today of 8.3 million. Many scientists think Earth has a maximum carrying capacity of 9 billion to 10 billion people. One such scientist, the eminent Harvard University sociobiologist Edward Wilson, bases his estimate on the calculations of the Earth's available resources in a book called The Future of Life. And he says the constraints of the biosphere are fixed. Here's the reality. The reality. By the year 2050, the human race will need to become vegetarian in order to support all the people on our planet. Period. If everyone is to eat, we will have to grow everything for grain. And none of that grain would be to support livestock. So not only will we have to be vegetarian, we're going to have to be vegan, because we won't have any milk or cheese. My guess is that our food will need to be synthetic to be able to maintain and develop something that's fairly healthy for the population that we'll have to support. So the days of heirloom tomatoes may be gone. Okay. It's not about me, I understand that. But we live today in the Garden of Eden. Okay? That's where we're living today, right now, in the Garden of Eden. But with availability of clean drinking water and shifting weather patterns, that may be harder to sustain as we go on. Why have I chosen to share this projection with you this morning? Not to bum you out, clearly, but because we're at a crucial point in history, and possibly we may be just beyond the tipping point. It's hard to know for sure. Everybody has a different opinion. But the work of legislating for the welfare of all needs to happen. And it needs to be our primary concern. We need to be thinking about all the people around this planet, how we're going to feed them all, how we're going to take care of each other. As Unitarian Universalists, we must model behavior that is based on a concern for our interdependent web and compassion for all. We can grow food, we can care for those that we know and love, but in the next 35 years, we will need to also care for the stranger. Here is the not-so-fun fact, if you thought the rest was tough. Americans consume about 400 gallons of oil per person. Are you ready for this? For the food we eat. 400 gallons a year per person for the food we eat. Author and scientist Stephen Hopp writes sarcastically that a way to improve food-related fuel economy would be to buy a quart of motor oil and actually drink it. He then goes on to point out that if every American family were to eat just one meal each week that was composed of locally or organically raised foods, we would reduce our country's oil consumption by over 1.1 million barrels of oil each week. One meal grown locally once a week. Becoming a less energy-dependent nation. It's a goal. Let's think about that. Let's translate that. What does that actually mean? A bowl of fruit, including bananas, travels about 18,000 miles to get to our tables. Wow. How can we get into the reality of it all? How can we get into balance of it all? We frankly have to be more mindful about everything and the consequences of our purchases. Every single one. Thousands of years ago, the Buddha offered a teaching to the world, which is still relevant today. He explained that the clutching desperately and the striving endlessly was a road to suffering, and that meditation and letting go of desire leads to enlightenment and nirvana. Buddhist monks literally wander the cities and countrysides and endeavor to teach the middle way in exchange for a bowl of rice. It was and still is the responsibility of the people to care for these monks as they travel. A monk would literally arrive at a doorstep and ask for a bowl of rice and would be very rarely turned away. They knew back then, and they know now, that things and consumerism was not the road to nirvana. Buddha often shared that the difference between utter bliss and out-and-out panic is literally a state of mind and a way of being. Thich Nhat Hanh, a contemporary Buddhist Zen monk and sage, models and encourages humankind, and he explains, aware of the suffering caused by unmindful consumption, I vow to cultivate good health, both physical and mental, for myself, my family, and my society by practicing mindful eating, drinking, and consuming. I vow to ingest only items that preserve peace, well-being, and joy in my body, in my consciousness, and in my collective body, and consciousness of my family and society. I am aware that things bring damage to my body or my consciousness, and that poisons betray my ancestors, my parents, my society, and the future generations. I will work to transform violence, fear, and anger, and confusion in myself and in society by practicing a diet for myself and for society. I understand that a proper diet is crucial for self-transformation and for the transformation of society. Now that is a resolution for a balanced life. My friends, last week I asked us in this sanctuary to stay in the here and now with an eye strategically towards the horizon of our future. Because it is what happens in the here and now that will make or break what comes to pass in our future. I worry that clean water, locally grown food, health care, and a roof over our children's heads will be a difficult standard to maintain in a world that will not be able to employ billions of workers. Unemployment is not just a political issue, it is an issue of survival. How will humankind and all of the other species survive on a planet that is becoming so clearly overstretched? We are overfishing water that is largely polluted, dumping tons of garbage at an alarming rate, fracking for natural gas with little regulation, and wasting renewable resources at every turn. Let us begin. Let us begin by being aware of the suffering caused by unmindful consumption. And remember to breathe, because we'll all be needing to breathe. It is our obligation, and I use this word very intentionally. And a lot of Unitarian Universalists would gasp at just the idea that I say it's our obligation. But I do believe this. It is our obligation to endeavor to shift the direction of our future, beginning at home, to transition to solar if we can. My panels will be going up on my roof tomorrow morning. To find the most fuel-efficient way to live and to eat, and to be ever mindful that there are people who barely are surviving on this planet. While we are mostly thriving. I agree with the teachings of the Buddha that bliss and suffering are a state of mind, and a way of being needs to be such that we do change. But we also need to be committed with our intention. At different times throughout history, we have been called to get involved to change the world. Gandhi, be the change you want to see in the world. Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, all calling us, Mother Teresa. And the people are numerous. This no longer is a nice notion, but a strategy for our very survival. Let us seek a sustainable balance in here and now and be ever mindful that this is the life that we chose and continue to choose each and every moment of our lives. In closing, I'd like to just share a brief prayer for commitment and courage. O name, for that which holds us will not let us go. O force of vision in our lives, source of dreams that hold us captive and give us reasons to wake, help us to find the strength to persist. When despair comes knocking or the road seems too dry and dusty, when the circumstance conspires against greatness or the honest telling of truths. Help us to find the power and the inspiration to endure. Or at the very least, help us to find our way back to the simple rituals of love and justice that can resuscitate our dreams. In this life, may we love deeply, act in humble but determined ways, and never waver. May we persist until the sun sets and wake again to persist once more, until the world of our boldest aspirations is made real by passion and also by endurance, stubborn faithfulness, and persistence, the trademarks and engine of a noble and visionary life. For the sake of all we cherish, O Spirit of life and love, we pray.